For Pacifica Radio, April the 4th, 2024. I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It is Anti-War Radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. I'm editorial director of antiwar.com and author of the book Enough Already: Time to End the War on Terrorism. You can find my full interview archive, more than 6,000 of them now, going back to 2003, at scotthorton.org, at youtube.com/scotthortonshow, and all your favorite podcast catchers and things out there. Okay, guys, next up on the show is Kyle Anzalone. He's our news editor at the Institute and opinion editor at antiwar.com, and he also is the host of his own show, Conflicts of Interest. Welcome back, Kyle. How you doing?
Doing very well, Scott. Thanks for having me back on.
And so let's start, if we can, with the latest update on what all we know or don't about the terrorist attack in Moscow there last month.
Right. Well, the bad news is over 140 are dead. Russia captured some of the perpetrators. They've also arrested about a half dozen other people who they said were involved. Russia claims the perpetrators or the terrorists were heading for the Ukrainian border when they stopped them. If you look at the map, it's a little unclear. They were definitely headed west. Of course, west of Moscow is both Belarus and Ukraine. And so it's not immediately clear why the Russians think they were definitely going to Ukraine, but that's what the Russians are saying. It's pretty clear the terrorists were tortured pretty severely by the Russians after they were captured. And so I would be highly skeptical of anything they say. I imagine they're going to say what the Russians want them to say. Russia does claim they have compiled some other evidence, though, to show that there are at least Ukrainian connections to the terrorists who perpetrated the attack, although none of that has been made public as of this time.
I guess they're arguing over just how much information the Americans shared with the Russians before this thing. But aside from the tragedy of the whole thing, it goes to show how completely screwed up our foreign policy is when we make enemies out of Gaddafi and Assad and our friends, the Shiites we put in power in Iraq and Iran and Russia, when these are all enemies of our only real enemies, these international terrorist groups that our government, of course, created in the first place. Not that I'm saying they control them, but
from the New York Times reporting, the U.S. gave Russia some but not all the information that they had. And it's really unclear at this point what that means. It could mean they just, you know, told the Russians essentially what they told the public, that they were concerned something was going to happen around those dates. And if they passed no other information, you know, I'm sure that's giving the Russians part of their concern as why they think the Americans are behind it. But we just don't know all the details yet. But again, it goes to show how screwed up the Americans' foreign policy is, where, you know, we could be working with the Russians against the bin Ladenites. And from a lot of people's perspective, this will be seen as the Americans working with the bin Ladenites against the Russians.
Yeah, seriously. And, you know, I don't advocate by saying that to me, Al-Qaeda being the real enemy, I don't think America should be going over there to fight them. I wrote a whole book about how our government isn't up to doing that task correctly. And so, to put it politely, and so their mandate, their writ to attempt to do so must be revoked. On the other hand, fighting against their enemies like this is another question altogether. And
I will say, Scott, just to steel man the argument for U.S. or U.K. involvement, I think people are more pointing out that the CIA or MI6 would have been aware that this was going on and continued to support the GRU and the Ukrainian intelligence as it was happening and didn't warn the Russians about it, even though they would have had significant knowledge of it. And that would be more their culpability rather than directly being involved in hiring those. And I think a lot of people who point and believe there's some kind of American involvement here often forget and don't like to highlight that Russia was largely responsible for the defeat of the Al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria, the Islamic State as well, but mainly, you know, the Al-Jalani Brigade in northern Syria was defeated and bombed out of Aleppo and a lot of other areas by the Russians. And so there is significant hatred for Russia amongst, you know, particular groups of jihadists in the Middle East and Central Asia still.
Yeah. Well, and if you go back over the last 20 years, hundreds of Russians have been killed in various suicide attacks and assaults on schools and God knows hospitals and God knows what. Planes brought down, the subway system in Moscow bombed repeatedly. And, you know, the Bin Ladenites have been at war with them since back when America was allied with the Bin Ladenites against them in the battle days of the Cold War under Carter and Reagan. So no reason they would have stopped now. All right, enough of that. So let's talk about the actual battlefield in Ukraine. There's two coinciding stories here. One of them is it's all falling apart, and the other one is it's all our fault for stabbing them in the back and not giving them all the weapons they needed. Kyle, what do you think about both of those things?
Right. So we have some warnings from Ukrainian generals and commanders that wherever Russia decides to attack when they launch their major offensive, it's going to be successful, that the Ukrainians just simply cannot repel them. Now, these are commanders that were under Zelushny, the commander of the Ukrainian armed forces that was relieved earlier this year of duty by Zelensky, and I believe is now ambassador to the United Kingdom. And so there may be some political reasons that they are making these statements, but it does seem that what they are saying is what we are seeing on the battlefield, where right now the Russians are steadily gaining territory. A lot of this is done through these new bombs that Russia is using. Actually, they're old bombs. They're, I believe, from the Soviet era, very large, either 1,500 or 2,000-pound bombs that Russia has designed what I think Americans would call JDAMs, which are precision-guided kits for these bombs, and they're dropping them, and the Ukrainians don't have air defenses to repel them, and they're destroying Ukrainian positions along the front lines and allowing the Russians to gain a lot of territory. And so the Ukrainians are losing, and these generals point out that there's really nothing that the Americans could do as far as giving Ukraine weapons at this point, that is essentially lost. But from the official narrative that we are hearing, what's happening is that the Republicans held out for too long, and now the Ukrainians are losing on the battlefield because of a lack of American support. And there may be a little bit of truth to this, Scott, that the Ukrainians would be doing better if the Americans had followed through with their promises to give Ukrainians whatever it took for as long as it took. But just like the promises the Americans have made to so many other proxies around the world, maybe most recently the Kurdish and forces in Syria and Iraq during the Syrian and Iraq war against ISIS there that we fought, that we were never going to follow through with that pledge. And so the Ukrainians now feel abandoned, and maybe somewhat rightfully so, but we weren't going to escalate to full-on war with the Russians. And so now the Ukrainians are about to pay a massive price for that.
Yeah. Hey, you guys, did you know that I don't just write books, I publish them? Well, the Institute does, and I'm the director, so yeah. 13 of them now, including my 4. We published 5 more in 2023. Lori Calhoun and Tom Wood's books about the COVID regime, Joe Solis Mullen on the fake China threat, Jim Bovard's latest, Last Rights, and our managing editor Keith Knight's Domestic Imperialism. And we've got more great titles coming in 2024. Check them out at libertarianinstitute.org/books and help support our anti-government efforts at libertarianinstitute.org/donate. And thank you.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. Let me tell you about Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. Who knew? Artificial bank credit expansion leads to price inflation and terribly distorted markets. If you've got any savings left at all, you need to protect them. You need to put some, at least, into precious metals. Well, Roberts & Roberts can set you up with the best deals on silver, gold, platinum, and palladium. And they've been doing this since 1977. Hey, if you just need some sound advice about sound money, they're there for you too. Call Tim Fry and the guys at 800-874-9760. That's 800-874-9760. Or check them out at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. You'll be glad you did.
Well, and, you know, I've been reading a lot about this lately, and the arguments for more weapons are essentially hollow. They go, well,
with more artillery, it'd be better. But they can't account for the fact that the Russians got all the artillery they need and a lot more men. And so that's as simple as that. And then you had, like, Zelensky saying, what we need is a scientific breakthrough that gives us a brand new technology to bring to the battlefield. You know, like this is a movie. Somebody's going to invent a brand new, you know, laser Gatling gun or some kind of thing that's going to solve this problem. Total pie in the sky stuff. And then, so where does that leave us then? World War One, but with remote control helicopters, right? I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, just the Ukrainians steadily losing territory until they finally realize they have to enter into negotiations to stop the bleeding, or else the Russian offensive is just going to go on and on and on. I would suspect that Russia is really looking to take Odessa before this is over, but you know, we will see how this plays out over the summer. Again, we have the Ukrainian commanders and officers warning that the front lines really could collapse at any moment here. And the Ukrainians appear, and so do the White House, increasingly desperate at this point. We have the French president talking about putting French troops on the ground. The Ukrainians have just dropped the conscription age to 25, and so that's going to allow them to round up, I think, about 200,000 young men and throw them into this meat grinder. And the Biden administration is just completely ignoring all American law and authorizing weapons shipments to Ukraine without any funding. Right now, the White House apparently has a $10 billion deficit on money they need to purchase weapons to replenish U.S. stockpiles that were sent from the weapons that were sent to Ukraine over the past 2 years. And even with that deficit, they claim to save $300 million from the Army budget, and rather than applying that money to replenish the U.S. stockpiles, they use that money to ship Ukraine another $300 million in weapons. I mean, so you know, we're well past respecting the law at this point.
Yeah, and I guess it raises questions about how much more money they can find in the black budget and in the Pentagon budget if they want to just continue to do it by executive fiat. There is an election coming up and everything.
Right. And they do have one more scheme they're kind of working on here. And this is to have NATO establish a $100 billion fund and then also give command of the Ukraine security group from the U.S. over to NATO. And this would, what they say, Trump-proof any future aid to Ukraine, so allow them to fight it for another few years, but will also do an end run around Congress at this point. And Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, still appears willing to hold out for some time on the actual vote to send more aid to Ukraine. But at the same time, he's actually saying he's willing to pass the Repo Act, which will allow the U.S. to use seized Russian funds to arm Ukraine.
And how much are we talking about there?
So there's $300 billion in the collective West that are held by countries that are members of the G7. I think it's $5 to $6 billion in the American accounts. Most of that money is held in the European Union or Japan, who seem less interested in going along with this, understanding that this is a massive breach of international norms and will likely contribute to countries forming financial systems outside of the American and Western orbit.
Now, I did see some footage of the Russians making a big mistake and driving an armored column down a road where they all, I think 6 or 7 vehicles, were quickly destroyed by, looked like at least in one case I could see it was just a guy with a shoulder-fired rocket, although I guess it could have been a vehicle firing a rocket at him, but they took these guys out, and so it's really not over yet, although it's hard to quantify that sort of looking through a soda straw at one little battle. But you got to give the Ukrainians credit for fighting with courage when they're clearly overmatched here and they're still out there slogging it out on the promise that Joe Biden has their back, which is, you know, that's bravery right there.
Right. As I don't support the U.S. sending more aid to Ukraine, at the same time, I do realize that the Ukrainians got a bad deal here. It was their leadership and the leaders of our country that set them up for this when they could have cut a deal in the early months of the war. And this is something that Ted Snyder, who writes for us at the Institute and at antiwar.com, has maybe done the best job of anybody really documenting and highlighting the importance of this, that in March and April of 2022, there was a real agreement on the table where the Ukrainians could have agreed not to join NATO and taken some, you know, demilitarization steps. And in exchange, Russia would withdraw out of the Donbass. They are willing to allow the Donbass to remain a part of Ukraine just to have Kiev agree to neutrality. And when the Ukrainians were ready to sign it, the Americans and the Brits, they went to Kiev and they talked Zelensky out of it. And ever since, we've been at war. And it'll be known as the worst deal in Ukrainian history. They'll have lost maybe half of their country because they were unwilling to accept neutrality.
Yep. Yeah, just you wait till my new book is done long after the fact when nobody cares anymore. Because I got a really good section on that. Anyway, I'm sorry. All right, you guys, we're out of time, but that is the great Kyle Anzalone. He's our news editor at the Institute and opinion editor at antiwar.com. Check out his great podcast, Conflicts of Interest. Really appreciate you, Kyle. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, y'all, and that's it for the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's Antiwar Radio. I'm here every Thursday afternoon from 2:30 to 3 on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. See you next week.